This week, while perusing the storefronts at the annual Grand Lodge Sessions of Illinois, I came across two artists, fairly local, Mrs. Chelsea and her husband Graham, also a brother. Together, they're makers in their own studio, Studio L. Dean Handmade Art. They've created all kinds of things, but a recent product commission really put them on the Masonic map. Stay tuned for this great interview to hear more about this awesome project, some of the charitable giving, and all of the research that Studio L. Dean put into this great new offering. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 584. I want to thank our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. Without you, we cannot do this program and offer it the way we offer it, which is every single episode always free for all time. There's no exclusive paid backlog or subscription model, other than anyone who chooses to do a donation to the program. If you want to learn more about how you can help support the show and the various levels and your perks for doing so, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out the options. In addition, there's also a shop where we've got some unique items, as well as our bookstore, which is a listing of my own personal recommended reading and listening lists, books by those who have been on the show, and even recommended books by our guests. Thanks in advance. Now this week, we have an interview with a couple of the coolest folks I got to meet at the Illinois Grand Lodge Sessions last year. My thanks goes out to Brother Guide Sobecki, who has also been on the program in the past, for making the proper introductions and truly making this episode possible. So without any further delay, let's get into this great interview with the folks behind Studio L. Dean Handmade Art. All right, everybody, we're back this week, and I am super lucky. We've got the folks behind Studio L. Dean, which is all handmade art, and I met them at the Grand Lodge of Illinois' annual sessions after a conversation with another brother. So we have on today Miss Chelsea and Brother Graham of Studio L. Dean, and I just want to welcome you guys to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So we have had artists on in the past. You know, we talk about painting or sculpting or all of these things. And there's something I think inherent to, I guess it's like the maker community. Somehow, like most of my closest brothers in the fraternity anyway are also makers. My buddy Scott, he's a woodworker. Spencer is a master. He makes violins. So
Luthier.
Yeah, thank you. He's a master luthier. I've got other friends who do crazy art. But what you guys do is a little bit different, and you guys have done a lot of different stuff. But the thing that I saw at Grand Lodge was you guys did these really cool Masonic dice.
Yes.
I have to say the thing that was really interesting was that it wasn't like you just went to the dollar store, Hobby Lobby, and bought wood cubes, right, and burned symbols onto the sides. This was something completely different, as I understand it, for the two of you to embark in, and you guys did a ton of research on this also.
Yes.
There's no better way than to just start from the beginning and tell us how you got started, first of all, in the creative process of making. And then let's talk about how you came to go into this realm of dice and gaming and these kinds of things.
Well, I have been an artsy-fartsy kid my entire life. I think it's just kind of in my DNA a little bit. My folks are very creative people. My dad's a very avid woodworker. My mom is a complete sorceress with a sewing machine. She just did calligraphy and porcelain painting and so on. They actually met at Hawkeye Tech in Waterloo, Iowa. He was going for photography and she was going for commercial arts, which we now call graphic design. So I just kind of come by that part naturally. And they, of course, encouraged and enabled the creativity throughout the year. So I've dabbled in a whole bunch of things. And then also throughout life, I kind of encountered nerdiness. You know, my brother brought home Magic the Gathering from college one year. And so I was just enamored by the artwork on these cards as he's trying to build his Magic the Gathering decks. And he's like, you know what? You can't mess with my cards unless you learn how to play. I said, okay, teach me how to play then. So that was kind of my foray into the nerddom that has, you know, since exploded since the early aughts. So it was just kind of a natural progression when seeing YouTube videos of different art things that other people are doing and seeing people making dice and making resin dice. I'm like, hey, that's a nerdy thing I can do, and that's an arty thing I can do. That's combining two of my passions in one. I got a spare bedroom. Let's do it. So that's kind of how I got into that.
I find that story to be very similar. Yeah. I think many of us can relate. I never did, like, Dungeons and Dragons, but I was a Magic the Gathering player. I played games like all these different CCGs growing up.
Oh, man, my squirrel deck made me notorious in the area. Everyone remembers Kelsey and her freaking squirrels.
That's so awesome. Yeah, I did, like, Wyvern, and I tried out, like, the Next Generation Star Trek game. I would try everything a couple times, but for me, I stayed on Magic, and I think the only board game I ever played was a game called HeroScape, which I'll never forgive my friend for. I moved to California for a few years to go to college, and when I came back, he had sold all my parts. So,
no.
Darn you, Adam. Graham, you came into this, like, not right away. You came into this kind of organically.
Yeah, so for me, I've done art stuff throughout my life, not nearly on the scale that she does, but I have always been a giant nerd, and being a dice goblin is part and parcel with that. So when she started watching the tutorial videos on how to make dice, my first thought was, great, if we make our own dice, we don't have to spend money on somebody else's dice. It'd be much, much cheaper for it, like the fool that I am. And then as time went by, and it was after the impetus that started the whole Mason dice. Up until that point, I was basically the one who kept the bills paid. And it kind of hit the fan with the job, and I was just done with it. And while I was searching for the next thing that would pay the bills, I'm like, well, I've got all this free time on my hands. I may as well learn how to help out with this.
So now I can start talking with you about technique instead of talking at you about technique.
Well, and kind of the progression of it was there are pieces of the equation and steps in the process that she can't do. It's a little bit more on the computer-based side, the technical side, that she just does. It just doesn't click.
My brain doesn't work that way.
So there were a lot of expenses that were going out the door for somebody else to do these things. I'm like, well, why don't I just learn how to do that? And it turned out, oddly enough, that I had a talent for that aspect of it. So I do a lot of the computer design and the computer-based sculpting that gives us the basis for her to be able to do her thing without commissioning it out to somebody else.
That's awesome. So you do some, like, CAD work, basic CAD stuff? Is that what I understand?
Essentially, I generally use Blender for most of what I do.
Yeah.
And okay. It's an awesome program, and it's free. It's got a really steep learning curve.
But there's YouTube.
But there is YouTube, and once you get some of the basics nailed down, it's just building on what you already know. And we've been able to take us places that we didn't think we were going to, add extra just utility to all of the things that we can make.
Yeah, I thought it was funny when you said, you know, you're going to make dice so you don't have to buy them. And, like, my first foray, I think, into making anything ever was I would see something online, whether it was Pinterest or something like it, and I'd be like, oh, I'm going to go make that. And I would end up going to, like, Hobby Lobby, right? And I would buy this stuff, and I'd go home, and mess it up and then have to just buy it anyway.
Right.
Until it got better and better, right?
And the thing that everyone always forgets is, well, yeah, I could totally make that if I had every piece of equipment necessary and all of the supplies necessary. Like, if you ask me to make you a set of dice now, yeah, sure, I could whip that out for you, no big deal. But a couple years ago when we started doing this, it was, oh, wait, I need to buy a pressure pot, and I need to get an air compressor and air hose and the fittings and yeah. Several thousand dollars later. Yeah, yep. Now I'm ready to make you some dice.
yeah, totally. It's the same way with, like, I do leather work, and you can't do certain things without the proper tools. You guys have done this. You've been at it for a couple of years. You've perfected the process. I've seen the dice. People were walking up to your table that don't play games buying your dice.
Yes, that
it was really
that was
neat.
Unexpected. I expected to see some people come up and go, "Oh, I remember when I did play," or like the current players going, "Ooh, yay!" And like I've never seen so many grown men squeal. By the way.
That was Mason squeal sometimes.
Yes.
My favorite comment the whole weekend of the Illinois convention was, "I'm so glad you guys are here. You're the only ones that brought anything fun."
he's laughing and choking while he's muted, by the way, folks.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, and it's true, because everything that, look, Masons, we love stuff. A lot of us are collectors. We like anything with the with the Masonic symbol on them. And sometimes that stuff just gets, like, super stupid and cheap. Like, you just throw a square and compass on anything, and we're like, ooh, I'll buy it. And we do that. And sometimes there's quality stuff out there, and it's exorbitant in price or whatever. And then sometimes there's what I call practical things that you can buy that are just neat. And they don't scream Mason unless you're using them. And I think that's what's really cool about this dice set, is that it is a practical thing. You could use it for any number of games that you might want to play. But also, it's kind of, and this is just, you know, the nerd in me, right? Like, it would have a place on the bookshelf,
yes.
Right? That gets dusted. And people are like, oh, that's neat. It's a talking piece, and they're totally beautiful. And you guys had several different colors as well that you were trying out. I remember seeing some of your prototypes.
Yes. We did bring our prototypes for York Rite, Scottish Rite, Shriners, Knights Templar. We had been doing some color tests because, honestly, we got sick of looking at blue for several months. And let's just cleanse the eye palette and play with a new color for a week. And then also, like, oh, we have this commission for black and white. Hey, now that we know how to do black and white, that'd actually be really good for Knights Templar and, you know, that kind of stuff. But, we did bring our color tests in just to show, like, this is what's coming down the pipeline. Eventually, we're working on it. We are just the two of us. And, like, sometimes my niece helps ink dice. But it's just the two of us in our spare bedroom doing this. So if demand really starts spiking, like, it's might be a thing you're going to have to wait.
You know, we'll get done. So let's pull that thread a little bit, right?
Okay.
Sometimes people will, I guess from, I was born in 81, so, like, I'm right on the cusp of Gen X and millennial.
Yep, and 84 for me.
Yeah, and it's like my younger days, I didn't have the ability to, but I wanted it, right? And what I mean is, I wasn't able to go to Bespoke Anything and say, dude, I love what you guys do. Can you make me a thing? And this is how much I can spend.
Right.
Right. I didn't have the ability to do that. I'm 41 or 2. I don't remember, but I'm at a place now where, and I have been for a little while, I think in my adult life, where, you know, you have that ability now, and I can go to my friends and I can say, I went to my buddy Spencer, for instance. I said, hey, make me, I need some wooden Art Deco bookends, right? I don't care what they cost. Because to me, it's, I don't care how long it takes. I don't care what it costs. I know they're coming. And the value for me is that they're custom made. They right. took time. I know the person who made them. I know they use their hands and their skills to do this. And as a maker myself, when I tell somebody it's going to be 3 weeks or 6 weeks to do a custom wallet or something, they get it. They know.
Yeah.
And I got to imagine it's the same with you guys. People are going to, and they probably have come to you to say, I need a custom order. And
yeah,
it takes a while, right? And they appreciate it so much more because they know you guys, they know your story, they know that you're doing it right there. You know?
Yeah, 99.9% of the time when someone orders something from us, whether it's the Mason Dice or anything else, and I tell them our turnaround time, they're like, yeah, you could have told me 6 months and I'd have been totally fine. It's we're cool. Just get it to me.
Get it to me this decade. We'll be all right.
Yeah. We had one guy ask us for a commission at GammaCon this last weekend, a big gaming convention in Cedar Rapids, commissioned us for a bunch of dice. And we're like, well, with some of the other things that are coming up and this masonry thing we're doing, we can promise you 100% we'll have it ready for you by next GammaCon. We're going to shoot for sooner, but, and he's like, dude, it's totally cool. It's totally cool. It takes as long as it takes, man. So it's been refreshing having been in customer service in various roles throughout the years to have customers that are not angry and impatient, but rather very excited for the service you're providing them.
Yeah. And I think that was evident when I saw guys buying and looking at your dice. Like, they were excited, as you said. This was the only thing that was fun at the convention. So this wasn't just you guys taking some already made dice, blanks, if you will, and then just throwing some clip art on them. You
right.
guys did some serious work, background research. You guys went to the museum and library in Iowa, which is the largest Masonic library in the contingent United States. Tell us a little bit about this journey that you took.
Oh, boy. So October of 2021 was my first booth event for Studio LD, the first time I brought my stuff out of my house and set it up somewhere and was selling it to live people. And at that convention, a gentleman came up to me and was very fascinated by the fact that I was making dice. And he said, so you do these yourself. Would you be able to make dice with this symbol on them? And he pointed to his Masonic ring. And I was like, well, technically, yes. It depends in with that, too. Like, I don't know if this is copyrighted. I don't know how much it'll cost to get masters made and so on and so forth. And he said, well, I don't know any of that stuff either. But I do know the librarian for the Iowa Masonic Library and Museum. And I know that he's a big giant nerd, too. And I know a whole bunch of other Masons who are nerds. And I know that he said, what did he say? He said, D&D is becoming the new golf for Masons. And so there's an opportunity there for you, a very large and very underserved niche market. And so he said, I think this is something that maybe you should look into. And so I was like, yeah, totally. And I wrote down his name and the librarian's name and continued on with the convention. After the convention, I was talking to my friends. How did it go? How'd your first convention go? And it went really well. And I was talking with my friend Monica Schmidt. She's big into the Sherlockian circles, like big Sherlock Holmes fan, and knows lots of people all over the country and internationally that are in these big Sherlockian circles. And she says, hang on a second, I know a guy. And all of a sudden, I'm in this messenger chat with Dr. S. Brent Morris. And she knows him because he's that really nerdy husband of her Sherlockian fairy godmother, who picked her up from the airport over in Boston and was doing card magic and is a big math nerd. Like, that's how she knew him. But, of course, in masonry circles, like, he's top brass, kind of, basically, right? And he also happens to be somewhat of an expert in Freemasonry iconography and symbolism. And she says, here, I know another guy, too. And I'm in suddenly in this Facebook chat with Guide Svecki, and he's big freaking deal in his own right, and also big freaking nerd, and big in the Freemasonry stuff. And so that all of a sudden was the beginnings of my R&D team, essentially. And I told Monica, hey, I'm going to go to the library on X and such date. I've never been to the Masonic Library. Do you want to come with me? Yeah, sure, that'd be great. And so we both go to the library, and Bill Krueger was the librarian at the time. He has since retired, but he was just so generous with his time and showed us all through the library and took us into the vault with all of the just extraordinary collection of books that they have, and was able to just immediately, like, literally the first book he picked out was the exact right thing I needed. And he had a whole stack of other ones that pulled out just in case. Yeah, man knows his stuff. And his office is completely covered with all this nerd stuff everywhere. And he's super interested in this. And Craig Davis, the secretary, happened to be there. And he came down and talked with Bill for a second. And the same time that Monica is texting Dr. Morris, and she's like, oh, I'm talking to Brett right now. And wait, I was just talking to him on the phone 10 minutes ago. What the heck? And so Monica sets us up and we all take a selfie and we send it over to Brent. And Brent takes a picture of himself and sends it over. And I think that was when it clicked that, no, really, Monica knows this guy and is on first name basis with this guy. And wait, how do you know this guy again? Like, it was funny to see these two grown men get a little bit starstruck. A little bit, just a little, you know. So just answering all of the questions and giving me the grace of being ignorant and maybe saying or asking silly questions. Like, he was just very open and right away understood what it was that we were trying to do and why we were trying to do it. The main focus I had through this whole thing and talking with everybody involved was that, you know, I don't want this to appear to be some kind of cash grab. Like, yes, it's a very underserved, very large niche market, but I don't want to be some rando chick coming in and going, hey, guess what, nerds, you're going to give me all your money. Like, that's not a thing that I ever wanted to have any inkling of. And so I wanted to make sure that I approached it with the proper amount of respect and with asking every single question I had so I could fully understand the subject matter, so that then I could give this project the finished and polished outcome that the brothers and other Mason people really deserve in such a long and storied tradition. And while I was doing all of this, Graham's hearing more and more about this Freemasonry stuff. And, like, we knew it existed, you know. We recognized the square and compass as that's the Freemasonry logo, right? We've all seen the Simpsons Stonecutters episode kind of spoofing it. Shoot, my dad, all growing up, was an operative Mason. So my friends' dads, when they hear that, oh, yeah, my dad's into masonry. Oh, your dad's a brother? I didn't know. What lodge? What? He works for this tuck pointing company. Oh, okay. And, like, that whole little line of conversation was always super confusing. But now looking back on it, I find it absolutely hysterical. But,
you know, it's funny that you say that. I had the same thing happen to me because growing up, my dad was a bricklayer, part of a bricklayer's union, and people would call him a Mason all the time. And so when I became a Freemason, I went back to my grandfather. My dad was just not in the picture anymore. And I was like, hey, was my dad a Mason? Well, he was a bricklayer. Was he a Freemason, though? Oh, no. Oh, okay. That was a really funny moment. So Graham got intrigued by the project and became initiated.
That's how it really got on our radar. Carrie Staggs is the guy that came up to my booth that that convention and planted the seed and said, this is a thing you should consider. And then as we continued maintaining contact and as I continued delving deeper into this and understanding it so that I could make the final product what it should be, Graham gets more intrigued. He goes and has dinner with Carrie, and I'll let you talk.
It was a while later. You had already got started. You had already done the library thing.
This is several months.
You had ordered a set of dice from a set of masters from a company. Several months later, that everything happened with the job thing. And I knew that you had spent an arm and a leg on those masters. So I was thinking to myself, well, if you're going to scale this up, first thing, you're going to need more than one set of masters because they're not going to last forever. And you want to have more just so we can make more molds on this and scaling up and blah, 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 blah. So that's when I started learning how to make master dice just so that we didn't have to pay somebody else to do it because it was...
If we're talking just the Mason dice that I ordered were right around 300.
It was an expense that we couldn't keep affording to make, especially when we're talking about making 20 sets of molds at a time. So I started learning how to do that. And then I went with her to the next convention and helped set up the booth and helped man the booth. And it was after we were closing up shop for the night that Carrie wandered by. He's like, hey, sit down, have a chat. And he asked me, so have you ever thought about being a Mason? And quite frankly, no, I had the impression that it was kind of a long family history of it. You had to know X number of people. You had to have been fairly well in at least around the group for most of your life. So it was never really on my radar. So, no, I've never really thought about it. Didn't think it was a possibility, so it never really crossed my mind. And he asked me some questions, and he's like, well, come on out to dinner next month and meet some of the guys and, you know, just hang out for a while. A few months later of doing this, like, so are you ready to petition now?
So you're doing this, right? You're totally doing this.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. We got you. We hooked you.
Yep.
Well, that's so cool. I mean, like, what a neat and interesting story. You know, you have something, I think, that is special, Grandma, in that what a cool story in how you came to become a member of the fraternity. Just, I mean, a lot of us have some family history or whatever. Like, I didn't have anybody in my family, so I it was nothing cool. I had no story. I was a web inquiry, right? And then later on, I found out my great-great-granddad was a Mason down in Pope, Arkansas. And some guys have this long family lineage. Some guys join and they get to raise their dads, you know, bring their dad in or something. So you have a really cool, unique story that I think will entertain and make people interested for the rest of time. Congratulations on that.
Well, and it's been kind of a whirlwind because when Carrie first invited me out to dinner, this would have been about a year ago today.
Yeah.
Give or take.
It was right after GammaCon last year.
It was during GammaCon. So yeah. It would have been a year ago, like this last weekend. And I got my first degree in August, third degree at the beginning of January. I'm the senior deacon now. And I think honestly, the kind of the coolest part about this is going back to the dice themselves. So you mentioned it earlier, the whole brotherhood, every one of them, has some interest in the iconography. Either they want some really old books that are hard to get anywhere else, or they've got some decorations around the house, or in most cases, they've got some clothing that they can wear out in public. But at the same time, you don't have a lot of things that you can show off on a regular basis. But you go out to gaming nights at least once a week, maybe two or three times a week, and you can take these with you every single time. So not only is it a functional tool that you can use in your gaming sessions, but it's also something you can show off and not be too flamboyant about. You know, this is a cool thing. So it's a conversation starter. It's like, oh, what's that? And this is another way to kind of get people interested in the fraternity itself.
One of the things that I enjoyed about the R&D process is went to the library and I got all this information and got all the crash course background in what all of these different symbols mean. And man, Masons love their symbols. There's a crap ton of symbols. And trying to distill all of that down into the most quote unquote universal ones was a big challenge because like there's the different factions of, you know, Shriners and Knights Templar and York Rite and Scottish Rite, but there's also like
Everything you could imagine. There are groups for everything, and it is so crazy to really think about the various groups that are out there. I mean, honestly, you could research and you could make, let's just pretend you made a set of dice for every group there was. I mean, just under the, what we call the Allied Masonic degrees, you'd have over 20 sets.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
It's absolutely nuts. And just being able to have the ear of Dr. Morris and being able to really distill things down and go, yeah, that's really popular in your area, but not super popular out on the West Coast. Or really, I think this one is going to be more universal in this case and so on and so forth. So once we got the eight, well, technically nine symbols down, then it was fun for me to then also reflect on those symbols and go, okay, yeah, so this means a certain thing in Freemasonry, but it can also point back to a certain aspect in tabletop games. And that camaraderie that you have when you have a party together and you're telling a story together. Because really, that's life, right? We're all just telling a story together. We all have these different parts, and it's all just one really big freaking long story. And so it was fun to be able to kind of go back and tie that iconography from Freemasonry into iconography as gaming stuff. And really building that brotherhood, building that friendship around the table.
I think that's really special. And what you had alluded to earlier, you said something along the lines of D&D's the new golf. There was a podcast that I helped produce a number of years ago, a good friend of mine, Doc Gentry, big D&D guy. And he had this podcast that he wanted to do and we were producing for a while. It was called Brothers and Dragons Podcast. And there was just so many people that I met that I had no idea were Masons, but they were like all at these D&D tables. And like, I'm there just recording audio. I think one of the things that's interesting too is that there's always been this kind of social aspect to the fraternity that brings people to the table, like a literal table. And it's like, okay, we're eating. And then, you know, you've got quote unquote, the old guys who are playing cribbage or bridge or something. And then there's like the new guys. They're not playing video games, right? They're playing D&D.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty neat. It's really cool to see.
Yeah. And for me, it's been, yeah, I know a lot of gamers. I know a couple of Masons. I didn't realize how much of a cross section there were between the two groups. And even recently, having known more Masons and having known more gamers and seeing how many of those people that I know that are both, like there's one guy just this weekend. I've known him for years in the convention as somebody that comes out and plays games and helps out with vendors and just does all kinds of convention stuff. And I only just this weekend learned he's a Mason at a lodge three blocks away.
How incredible, right? Yeah. We're everywhere. What is the future of Studio Eldeen? What are your guys' hopes? I mean, you guys have done a lot of work with these dice, and you guys have even done some projects where you're giving back, which I think is really cool. Tell us a little bit about that.
So because I was just so enamored with the museum itself and their incredible collection, like seriously, make a trip out to Iowa to Cedar Rapids to go see this museum, because what they have in there is just absolutely extraordinary. But also just the sheer amount of knowledge that Bill Krueger had absorbed over the years and then has now passed on to his successor. The curation of such a collection takes a lot of effort, and just having the preservation of knowledge and of handcrafted things has always been very important to me. I wanted to ensure that we gave back a portion of the proceeds from the sale of our Freemasonry dice to the Iowa Masonic Library and Museum. So every single set that we sell, a portion of that is going back to the museum. And I believe this spring we're going to be sending our first check their way after income taxes come in.
I think this is so cool. I mean, you guys have hit the mark on so many elements that I think means something to Masons. Number one, the idea of crafting something. Call me crazy, but almost every Mason I know has some sort of crazy maker hobby. And I think that's really awesome. So you check the box, right? You've got something that is up and coming and kind of making a resurgence in the world, which is, of course, gaming. And not just video gaming, right? We're talking about real gaming, sitting around a table, the original social networking, you might even call it. And it brings together these communities in this way. There's a really cool cross-section where you see both of these groups really intertwining. And then you're also, you have a niche product that is not just some slap a square and compass on a garbage. You guys did the research, you did the thing, you have a practical product, and you're giving back. I mean, I think it's just one of the coolest Masonic, quote unquote, I mean, I don't want to say it's a Masonic product, right? Because sure, anybody can buy the dice. And the thing is that, sure, it's geared toward a niche audience, and you guys have so much other cool stuff that you're doing also. I don't want people to think you guys are just doing dice. I mean, you guys do mugs and all kinds of really cool stuff. And we're going to put a link to your shop and to your website in the show notes, studioeldine.com. I think it's just, what an incredible thing you guys have done here. Before we go for wrap up, I wanted to find out if there's anything else that you guys would like to plug or talk about.
We're going to be hitting up some other conventions kind of within driving distance of Eastern Iowa. We're going to be at DemiCon in Des Moines. We're going to be at QuantumCon near Minneapolis. This is their first year for that convention, so everything's new, so we don't know what to expect, but we know some people running it, and we're going to take a trip up to Minneapolis this May for that. We're going to be at Anime Iowa. We're going to be at ICON again.
We're also going to shoot for doing Iowa Masonic Convention and
the annual communications for Iowa and for Illinois.
Yep. And we'll probably be teaming up with the guys in Illinois Regalia, because they've been super helpful to us.
And Harry is such a sweetheart, yeah. Absolute sweetheart. Harry and John are great people. But yeah, we're going to try to do convention circuit type stuff. But what mainly keeps us busy is churning out these dice for these crazy Masonic people. And also just random commissions, you know, people emailing and saying, hey, can you do this thing for me? Yeah, sure, let's do it. So, yeah.
It's all about having the right tools for the right job.
Yes.
And I think you guys are killing it. So I want to thank you guys so much and telling your story and giving us the time and honestly for sticking with me and being the grease in the, you know, being the grease on the wheel to keep me motivated in my scatterbrainedness. So I want to thank you guys really
from
absolutely.
The
bottom of my heart.
Thank you so much for having us. And also, quick little aside, we're going to be in this little publication called the Scottish Rite Journal next month.
You might have
like
heard of it.
Tomorrow, wanting the March-April issue. They're going to be doing a little thing on us, so check out the Scottish Rite Journal.
Woo-woo! That's awesome. I will make sure that we provide links for everything that we talked about. I'll put a link into the show notes also as soon as they drop the link for the issue so people can find you guys in there also. I think that'll be awesome. Cool. But thank you guys one more time. Thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, man. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Once more, my thanks goes out to Chelsea and her husband, Graham, for hopping on and making this such a cool interview, shooting the breeze and talking about the creative process and some of the background that happened while creating this awesome product. Again, if you want to learn more about them, you can head on over to Studio L. Dean. That's Studio ELDEEN.com. There are links to their portfolio, their shop, and of course their homepage, and all of their social links. I do want to mention that as makers, they rely on your support. And so if there's something that you're curious about, as they mentioned, feel free to contact them and see what they can do for you. That's it for this week. I want to thank you all for joining me. Next week, we should have a really cool conversation with Brother Scott Duball about his recent piece about the progressive line and the issues that have come up around that. Following that, we'll probably have another episode with similar talking points. We're going to talk to a return guest, host of the Masonic Muscle Podcast, Brother Cesar Rubio. That's going to be an episode you're not going to want to miss. But until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
Because you're